Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's March Madness time, baby! Connor, Christmas has come for the college basketball season. How excited are you right now?
I am super excited. You can hear the water fountain behind us. We're live on location at USC doing a show in person. Our first basketball one in person. Great to see you, buddy.
Yeah, we are in person. It will not be live, though,
because
they will be hearing it on a recording.
Not live.
But we are on campus. We were going to try to get an interview today. We're going to see if we can get it tomorrow. We'll see if that happens. Dealing with schedules as people are getting ready for the NCAA tournament and getting excited about everything throw some extra wrenches in there. But I got to ask you, which tournament are you most excited about? Now, I will give clarification. The men's tournament, as we are recording, has just gotten underway. We've seen the first couple of games, and we've already seen an upset. Duquesne beating BYU. Which tournament are you most excited about, men or women?
Well, the school I went to, Syracuse, isn't in, and the school I cover, USC, isn't in for the men, so it's going to be the women's tournament. USC, number one seed, Texas A&M, Corpus Christi, going to be covering that game Saturday. I'm excited once, you never want to say something's going to happen and then it blows up in your face, but USC should get to the Sweet 16, and then it's going to get real fun.
We'll see if they can make it there. That'll be an interesting trip. We'll see if we can get someone up there to cover it because it will be Easter weekend up in Portland. They both should be fun, though, both tournaments. A lot of people are more excited about the women, I think, and not just people around USC. I think a lot of people around USC are definitely more excited for the women because of how the two seasons played out, but just because of the name value. A lot of people know Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and Juju Watkins and Hannah Hidalgo and all these stars that are popping up, whereas on the men's side, not necessarily as many stars, and there are some guys that are going to be in the NBA, but part of it is a weak draft class. They are not guys that are all in contention for the 1-2-3 seeds. This is not 2020, 2021, when it was Evan Mobley, Cade Cunningham. You're hearing all these names every day because, hey, which one of these guys is going to go first? Where's Jalen Suggs going to go? All that type of stuff. Because of the weak draft class, I think that's hurt the college game as well. But it doesn't matter. Once the games start playing and the excitement starts going, there's that first upset like we saw with Duquesne. You see LeBron is all excited because his former high school basketball coach is coaching for Duquesne. He got him all shoes and everything. That's what it's all about in March. So it's going to be really fun. It's 3 weeks of madness. Honestly, I wish this Thursday was a national holiday. I wish it was. I wish that the Thursday and Friday that there were no school, no class, no work. We could all just sit at a bar at Vegas where Ryan is at or wherever and just watch games, have a ton of fun. But instead, we're going to be here working. We're on USC's campus. We're here for some football practice a little bit later. But we're going to talk about a little bit of basketball. We're going to wrap up the men's season. We're going to talk about the women's season because it's going to be an exciting weekend getting to host at the Gaylon Center. So welcome back to another edition of the USC Triple Double Podcast. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling, alongside my dynamic co-host, Connor Morissette, Mr. Triple Double himself. For any first-time listeners, the USC Triple Double Podcast is part of the Peer Style Podcast family of shows. We focus on the Trojan men and women's basketball programs. Each week we break down all the latest action, all the news, a lot of news coming out for the men's team, and look forward to the upcoming matchups. This week we'll be looking at the conclusion of the men's disappointing season, the opening of the NCAA transfer portal. More importantly, though, we're looking at the this weekend's action on the women's side, coming to Galen Center where the women Troy are hosting the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament after USC was selected as the national number one seed for the Portland 3 regional. Now, we talked about this last week. We expected them to be a number one seed, but were there any surprises to you when you saw the bracket be revealed on Sunday?
Well, as far as USC is concerned, no. They were expected to be the number one seed. They got that third number one seed. We'll get into it here now, Shotgun. What a stroke of luck that USC didn't get placed in Region 2, and that's what happens when you win the Pac-12 tournament. Because I think if they lose to UCLA, they're probably where UCLA is, which is in that loaded field. Iowa, Louisville's in there. It's a very, very tough bracket, and I'm glad UCLA's in there, too. I'm glad USC isn't.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was kind of interchangeable
LSU
there.
LSU, too.
You know, when we talked about, you know, you actually called it, and you said whoever won that semifinal game, if it ended up playing out that way in the Pac-12 tournament, would end up winning. And that's what ended up happening. So you think USC, UCLA have been pretty close in resume throughout the season. And with USC winning that, you think that probably flipped that, where UCLA kind of went to the conference tournament weekend as a potential number one seed, as we hear the construction going on around us. Welcome to USC, guys. Always building something new. But USC could easily be in that two seed, and that, like you said, that bracket is loaded. LSU as a three seed in that. Iowa, the number two overall seed, they got to be going, the heck, how did we get this? They got Colorado as well in there.
Yeah, who beat USC.
And who beat LSU earlier this year, too. So, and the Kansas State team that's really good as a four seed. So that has already beaten Iowa once. They split two games, those two teams. So a lot of good teams in that bracket. In the USC bracket, what stands out in the Portland 3 bracket? USC is the one seed. They'll play Texas A&M Corpus Christi, the 16 seed. And then the winner of that game will face off against Kansas or Michigan. But then it's on the other side of the bracket. You know, if USC makes it through the first weekend and makes the Sweet 16, likely going to play Virginia Tech or Baylor. Virginia Tech has been without Elizabeth Kitley. They're All-American, second-team All-American, I believe she was. She did not play in the ACC tournament. I think she's probably out for the season. It looked like it was a non-contact injury, and those, you know, obviously you start worrying about ACL type of thing. So if she's out, maybe Baylor wins. So USC playing a five seed there. But then the next game, if they make it all this way, we're making some hypotheticals here, the Elite Eight game has a chance to be electric. Because one, you could play Ohio State, who USC played in the opener, who did not trap very well in that opener, but that is their bread and butter. They speed you up, and USC, there's been some games where they struggle with turning the ball over and stuff with some pressure against Arizona a couple times. Or maybe Duke makes it through as a 7 seed. They're a quality team there. Or you got UConn sitting there at the 3 seed.
How about Syracuse? Don't forget Syracuse.
No, never heard of them. No. UConn's wiping away Syracuse. We know that's going to happen. Come on.
That's a national championship potential rematch from a couple years ago when UConn did wipe out Syracuse. But it was the championship game. So Ohio State, I think the fact that it's not Texas on the other side of the bracket is significant. We thought Texas would probably be a 2 seed. They end up getting the number 1 seed and Stanford goes to 2. Ohio State, you got to like them being the 2. A lot has changed from the beginning of the season, but USC beat that number 2 seed. So I think that bodes well for them. The team I'm most afraid of, though, is UConn. And you're right, probably not to mention Syracuse, because if both those teams win, they'd play in the second round, and I'd like UConn's chances. I think that's the team to be really nervous about if you're a USC fan.
Yeah, it should be an interesting matchup if it's Ohio State and UConn. Ohio State wiped up UConn last year, really gave them struggles with their pressure and their traps and stuff. But UConn has Paige Beckers back.
Yep.
And they've got a couple of other guards that they've added that are point guards. So they should be able to handle that pressure much better. So that should be an interesting matchup. Looking at it, so USC, we thought maybe they'll have Texas as a 2 in their bracket. Texas ends up getting a 1 seed over Stanford. So the three teams that potentially could have been the 2 seed were Texas, Ohio State, and Notre Dame. Out of those three, you probably would want to face Notre Dame just because they just recently had an injury and their coach announced that it is a season-ending injury. But otherwise, I think Ohio State is the matchup you wanted there instead of Texas.
You just don't want Texas. That's how I'd sum it up. And they dodged a bullet there too.
Yeah, so obviously USC can't play Stanford. They're not going to put Stanford or UCLA as the 2 seed in the USC bracket. So that was kind of the choices, and that's where USC – so it's a pretty good draw for USC.
Definitely.
They've got their opportunities. Now it's going to be, all right, how can they handle being in the postseason, dealing with hosting for the first time? I don't know when the actual regional started, but I believe this is the first time USC's ever hosted. And, you know, since they've started doing that for that. So it's going to be a lot of new things. And the fact that they have new players that have not been there. None of their Ivy players have been to the March Madness, as far as I know. I know Mackenzie Forbes did go when she was at Cal, but none of them went during their time at the Ivies. So it's not like their veteran players can lean on them and say, well, they've got tournament experience. Juju obviously does not have tournament experience. So how do they handle the inexperience factor of it and, you know, the newness of being in the NCAA tournament? A couple of the players did play last year and played in that first round game, but no one that got consequential minutes outside of probably Rhea Marshall. So it's going to be a new experience for them. That'll be the big challenge for them, but it sets up nicely for them to potentially go on a run. They obviously will have to do work, but doesn't look like too shabby of a draw for USC, much different than if you're like Iowa, looking like, how are we the number two seed and we got UConn in, or we got LSU and UCLA in our bracket. So nice setup for USC. We'll see what they can do. We'll preview their matchups coming up a little bit later. But let's move over to the men's side. The Trojans finished up last week in the Pac-12 tournament. We said they could go and beat Washington. We said we didn't know if they could win against Arizona, a motivated Arizona team, after USC just beat them. And that proved not to be the case. And I don't even want to give too much credit to Arizona. Like, they played better.
They did not play well in the first half, that's for sure.
Yeah, but USC shot 23%.
Exactly. Shot themselves out of the game.
Yeah, and so if you don't, you can't buy a bucket, you're not going to be able to, you know, to hang with a top 10 team, and that ended up being the case. USC did win the first game against Washington, 80-74. They lose to Arizona, 70-49. What are your thoughts on the Pac-12 tournament appearance, I guess, for USC? To me, Boogie Ellis was really good in one game. Boogie Ellis wasn't good in the other game, and that's kind of how the season went for USC.
That feels right to me as well. I felt like that first half against Washington, they couldn't miss, especially from deep, and it was like, oh, man, maybe this team just is cursed, especially when the big guy had that one-handed three-pointer right before halftime. It was like, that's going in? Are you serious? And then USC did a much better job defensively in the second half against the Huskies. Boogie Ellis had his big game, 25 points. They beat Washington, and then against Arizona, it was kind of a close defensive struggle. I think it was the fewest points Arizona had scored at that, maybe not at the half, but like with 5 minutes to go. It was a very, very tight game, and then Arizona goes and takes a lead at halftime, and then in the second half, USC couldn't buy a bucket, and at the end of the first half, they went like 6 minutes without scoring. So the offense totally dried up. They had Arizona right where they wanted them defensively, but when you can't score at all, you're not going to win a game, especially against Arizona. So I thought USC's defense was fine in that game, and then they just couldn't make shots to get into it, and they had no margin for error, and you can't play like that if you have no margin for error. So writing was sort of on the wall. Andy Enfield after said the season wasn't a disappointment. Tough to agree with him on that one. It was a down year overall, I'd say. But I don't know. What else can you say? They were disappointing this year. It was a tough year.
Yeah, it was disappointing because you expected Boogie Ellis to kind of be a guy that could carry you pretty much every night. And once the hamstring injury hit, it was off and on, off and on. He just never was able to get in that consistent flow where you can just expect 15 out of him, easy, and you're probably going to get 20, might get 25, might get 30. But it was never that way, you know, after he got injured. In this game against Arizona, he has back-to-back threes. USC's down early. They're not making any – they have 4 points the first 6 minutes or so of the game. He has back-to-back threes. Tie game. You're right back in it. Your defense is playing great. He doesn't score again. He went 2 of 11 in the game, 2 of 7 from deep. He fouls out. I think it was like 5 or 6 minutes left in the game. Disappointing end to his career at USC after he had been so good for USC and so consistent as a scorer prior to that injury. And then no one really stepped up. You know, they needed someone else to step up with him not going. And, you know, Kobe Johnson played well. Give him credit. He really came on at the end of the year, and hope to see him back next year and to build off of what he was able to do this year. I assume that he will, you know, test the draft waters and see what they say and do that, because why not as a junior? From what I've been told, doesn't necessarily look like he's looking to transfer right now. Now, they bring in a certain player, and that's going to eat on his playing time. So you never know if that changes things. However, as of right now, it sounds like Kobe Johnson most likely will come back to USC unless he gets a really good draft grade or something happens. He gets invited to the combine, does really well, that type of thing. So that's the building piece they got to build around. And, you know, he had 14 points, 8 rebounds in that game. He didn't have any steals, though. And when he didn't get steals and Boogie didn't score, those are two things they're like, okay, the defense isn't doing enough and the offense isn't doing enough. And that proved to be the case against Arizona.
They didn't get a lot of rebounds either, out-rebounded by a wide margin again. So some of the familiar issues that USC had all season, first half against Washington, the three-point defense, not great, and then the rebounding against Arizona, that really hurt them. So just one of those things where all year long, even when USC played well outside of that Oregon State home win, you could always point to something and say, this might come back to bite them in the future. I don't know if they can consistently play at a level like this and win games in March. And the rebounding hurt them, and just the lack of offense. And that was something that happened without Isaiah, without Boogie. I didn't expect to see those droughts with both of those guys, especially against an Arizona team that's not known for its defense. They're known way more for its offense. So just a tough break for the team, and hopefully they can regroup, add some guys from the transfer portal, and have a good year in the Big Ten.
Yeah, as you mentioned, Arizona had 28 points in the first half. I think it was the lowest point total in a half, at least a first half, under Tommy Lloyd.
Okay.
So, but it was 28-16.
Yeah.
They scored 16 points.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
You got to do more than that, and they did. Now, they shot 50% in the second half, but it was way too little too late, and they let Arizona shoot 52%, so it didn't matter. They now move forward. They go to the transfer portal. What's the biggest thing you would like to see USC identify and try to attack in the transfer portal?
I think it has to start with scoring, with Boogie leaving. Who's your guy who you can say, okay, this guy is going to be our leading scorer heading into next season? Ozziah Sellers, I don't know if you could have put that leading scorer tag on him, but he could have helped. He's in the transfer portal too, so I think they need some scoring. Defensively, they should be good enough, I think, right now. I don't know if you need to go in the portal looking at defense first. You just need impact guys who can help. So scoring, I start there. Another big would be a big help. I think they're okay at guard, depending on what Bronny does. If he leaves, then you need another guard. But if he comes back, I think the guards should be okay with Trent Perry coming in, Bronny, a couple other guys. I want some size, and I want scoring. Those would be my two big things going into the transfer portal right now. And we'll see what USC does, because we know they're going to have at least one or two guys.
Yeah, so obviously already we've seen their departures from graduation. Joshua Morgan out of eligibility. Boogie Ellis out of eligibility. And we expect Isaiah Carrier to be going into the draft. DJ Rodman as well, yeah, out of eligibility. Those three are out of eligibility. We expect Isaiah Carrier. He's going to be a lottery pick, so we expect him to leave. So it would be nice if he came back. Just saying.
That would be really nice. It
would be fun to see him play in USC colors one more year. But that does not happen. USC has also had three players enter the transfer portal. You had Ozziah Sellers, as you mentioned, which is kind of disappointing. I think he's going to blow up this offseason. I thought his confidence really came on in the second half of the season, both ends of the court. He's willing to shoot the ball, willing to be the guy when they were in a drought to, like, I'll take that shot. I don't care. And he was making them a ton of shots.
Whereas, I was looking forward to him too.
Whereas early in the season, even last season, like, he wanted to stand in the corner and be that spot up guy. Hey, I'm going to be a D&3 guy. And he was not consistently knocking down shots, but going off the dribble, one dribble, pull-ups, attacking the rim, different things we saw from him late in the season, I thought were really, really impressive and signs towards a big breakout next season. Unfortunately, it looks like it will be somewhere else. USC also lost former All-American, McDonald's All-American, Kajani Wright to the transfer portal, and walk-on senior or fourth-year junior, I guess we'll call him, Zach Brooker. Looks like he'll graduate from USC and probably move on, try to maybe play somewhere else, or maybe just try to go somewhere and get his a grad degree somewhere else. But that leaves openings. So they have some space on the roster now to go out and get some people. I mean, there's the Rutgers kid that just went into the portal. Would be a huge addition as far as rebounding and stuff. They've got to go out and get scoring, like you mentioned, because I don't think there's anyone on this team that we can identify as, like, that guy's ready to step. Like, Ozziah Sellers, maybe. But probably, like Kobe Johnson, you do not want him to step into that role, because we saw what happened when he was in that role. Now, maybe he can be that guy for you at times, but you don't want him to step in and that be his role next season. So go out and get a scorer now. You can go out and get somebody like Dalton Connect, like Tennessee did, from a mid-major program that scores, becomes the SEC Player of the Year. That's what you ideally want.
Look at Arizona with Caleb Love.
Yeah, and now that one's a little bit more just because it's from a power conference, but there's going to be
still the Player of the Year transferring in. It's possible to rebuild a roster in the point. It's just like football.
Yeah, and there's always scorers out there. What my point was going to be.
Before I cut you off,
there's always guys out there that can score the basketball. We see guys going into the portal all the time, and you're like, oh, he scored 16 points a game. And even on the women's side, I think there's like 30 something teams right now. Their leading scorer is currently in the portal. So a lot of those teams are not very good teams, but there is someone who can score. Now, can they score at this level? Can they be the person that is the go-to person? Those are the questions you have to figure out, and that'll be the questions that they have to do. But scoring, obviously, is one, and then rebounding. They need somebody that can, you know, they need, like, one of the Traores from Long Beach State. Even though one of them, I think one of them is 6'6 or 6'7 and averages, like, 9 rebounds a game. Like, that's the type of play. They need a junkyard dog. They need Chavez Goodwin. They need even, like, Darian Clark when he came over to USC. They need someone whose main thing is, I'm going to get rebounds. Now, hopefully they can make a layup after they get an offensive rebound. That isn't always the case, but at least someone who can get rebounds on the defensive end and give you a little bit on the offensive end, because that was such a big issue for them. And if it can be a rim protector as well, that is even better. And that's kind of the Rutgers big, whose name I'm blanking on right now. You know, that would be a great fit for them. Don't know that that's going to happen necessarily, but would be someone who would fit really well for USC, I think. Anything else on the men's side before we jump into or move forward with talking about our segments of the week?
It is a little scary needing as much help as USC does from the portal, because you look at some rankings, the Stanford big man, Max Reno, he's the number one player in the portal based on a list I saw. So maybe he's not number one overall, but he's a top guy. And I feel like if you add him, he's a good player. He was the most improved player in the Pac-12. But like, I don't know if adding a guy like that gets you where you need to be. They have multiple positions of need. They need to not only just add one guy who can come in and be the guy. It needs to be more. And just when I see Max Reno as the number one transfer in the portal, I'm like, okay, that guy's a good player, but
that's not USC our 24/7.
No. Who's 24/7 have? His
number? Well, this is a couple days old, so maybe Reno is up there. But Brandon Garrison, the former McDonald's All-American from Oklahoma State, obviously Oklahoma State fires their coach. Yeah. He goes in the portal. There's someone. And then a couple other Stanford guys are on this list. Andre Stojakovic, Paige's son.
I don't love him.
He's a shooter. You know, you can always use more shooting. He's got to get stronger, though. He's got to get thicker.
He's got to make him, too. He had some games where he was bad.
And then Kanan Carlisle, the point guard from Atlanta.
Tough to not like him. I like him more.
From Stanford. And there's a couple of Pepperdine kids.
Yeah.
Michael Ajayi and Javon Porter, who I don't know. Is he related to the Porter fam, the basketball Porter?
I'm not sure.
I think he may be.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
I don't know if his cousin or brother or exactly what, but he's one of the top 10. Doug McDaniel, point guard from Michigan. Now, USC is going to bring in Trent Perry, but again, I would not be opposed to them having a veteran point guard come in. I mentioned this on a previous show, or if Isaiah Collier did come back. And then, you know, that Trent Perry can play off ball and be, you know, the backup point guard and come in off the bench and run things that way, rather than putting it all on him and saying, hey, we need you to run the show immediately when you show up, because that often does not work. At the Big Ten level, I guess now. I got to go to the Big Ten level. And USC just needs to get some toughness. You know, going to the Big Ten, you're going to be battling. There's not going to be a lot of fouls. Someone's got to be in there. Cliff Omarui is the Rutgers big man. So he's in the top 10 as well. But we'll see if he leaves the East Coast, if USC even has a chance with that one.
Ajayi from Pepperdine is the name to watch. I know USC is definitely interested in him. And then one thing on Bronny, I heard he's similar to Kobe Johnson. It's either NBA or USC. He's not looking to enter the portal.
So I think Bronny's best move is to come back.
It's so clear. Yes, and he'll be the starting two guard, and it's all ahead of him. He can play. He'll be playing a ton.
And again, we talked about this in the past, but as many games as he can get this offseason, whether it be in the Drew League, whether his dad has to organize
LA Fitness,
whatever, he just needs more and more reps, more and more reps, him and Vince Wichuku the same way, as many reps as possible. Let's do our segments, and then we'll take a break, and we'll come back and preview the women's tournament. Let's start with our Juze section. Juju Watkins, once again, first team All-American, just different organizations giving out, including the Associated Press named her a first team All-American, the first USC player to be named a first team All-American, only the second one on the AP. They do first, second, and third. The only other one was Tina Thompson, 95-96. Now, the AP did not start their program, the All-American program, until 93-94, I think it was. So, in 30 years, though, only two. And she's the first team. In that 30 years, coming into this year, there'd only been three players that have been freshmen named to a first-team All-American. And you've heard of the names. Maya Moore, Paige Beckers, and then the girl from Oklahoma, I'm blanking on now. You know the names, but I can't remember it off the top of my head right now.
You know the names.
But Juju and Hannah Hidalgo from Notre Dame both got it, so there now have been five of those. But what an incredible honor for her to be a first-team All-American. It just shows you the future of the women's game is so bright that two freshmen are making on the All-American team this year.
Fully deserved. I felt like she sort of locked that in after the Stanford 51-point performance. You do that on the road against a team of that caliber, first-team All-American all the way. And she had a lot of other great moments as well. The Colorado game at home comes to mind, too. But that game against Stanford, that's going to go down in the history books. That's going to be my memory from the regular season of this year, for sure. That was special. That was a legendary performance. And that, to me, stamped her All-American status, for sure.
What about Isaiah Collier, you know, the finish up his season? How do you sum up his season at USC? I know it's disappointing that we didn't get to see him at full strength the entire time. But what did you think of him overall and his draft prospects as we expect him to go into the NBA draft and be a potential lottery pick?
It looks like, based on what I've seen, he's going to be a mid-first-round pick. I like Kevin O'Connor from The Ringer. He puts out a really good draft guide. He has him at number 13 overall right now. And that, to me, feels about right. It's sort of this draft class. I don't think there's like a home run obvious American prospect. Reed Shepard is the guy from Kentucky who a lot of people think could go over or number one overall or could be the first American chosen. And then there's some overseas prospects who I don't know a lot about. But Collier in the middle of that first round, I think between his struggles early and then his injury, just not playing a lot, and then how he improved as the year went on, that seems about right to me. And I know we both selfishly want him back, but I think if you're going to go 13 overall, you gotta go to the draft. Shotgun shaking his head.
Nope. If you're going 13, you're coming back. Come back and boost yourself into the top five. I know that's not going to happen, but that's what I would do if I was in.
I think middle of the first, though. That feels about right to me.
I feel like he's probably in that 8 to or 7 to 10, 11 range. And I don't know the teams or what their preference, all that type of stuff. But I feel like that's probably where he belongs right now. If he slides to 13, that's disappointing. You know, a guy coming into the season, potential number one, top five. Like, everyone's talking about, okay, it's a weak draft, but Isaiah Collier is kind of the one known commodity. And so he's going to be in top five. And that wasn't the case. Now, part of it was the injury, but I thought he showed some positive things.
He started to take over games. That was the difference.
He shot the ball better from outside, different things like that. So he had his growing pains early and then was able to make some things happen a little bit later. Another year wouldn't be hurt. I'm just saying. Him and Bronny, you know, put it together.
Well, the Jeff Borzello, I think, does he?
Yep.
Is he ESPN or is he 247?
Not 247.
Okay, then I think I'm talking about the right guy. He put out this big thing, or it's some NBA draft guy, so if it's not Jeff, I apologize. But he put out this thing where a lot of first-round picks, one-and-done freshmen, they're out of the league like this. So to your point about coming back, sometimes a guy has it in his camp, has it dead set, like, we're one-and-done no matter what. I wonder if that extra year of eligibility, how much that would help historically for guys who don't get that second contract. Because I think his whole point was, yeah, second-round picks we know don't really stick, but there are a lot of older players in the NBA, guys who have lasted a long time, and the younger generation, for whatever reason, there are some hits, but there have been a lot of misses. And I think historically, if you're drafted in the first round, you would stick a lot longer. And more recently, guys just aren't sticking for whatever reason. So that's I could write a paper on that. We don't get too deep into it. I just thought that was really interesting. If you're not a lottery pick and you're a first round pick, you might not stay as long as you used to, as our piece of equipment rolls away in the wind there.
Whatever. We'll get it later.
It's going really far away.
We'll get it later. No, I think you absolutely nailed it there, that it's because the NBA is not going to give you time to develop.
Exactly.
Like, you have to develop on your own. Now, I do not think that Isaiah Collier would not develop. Just seeing the work that he constantly puts in, the type of player that he is, I think he will put that work in. But you have to do it on your own. The NBA is not going to spoon-feed you development and give you opportunities to develop. You've got to go make it on your own. And even guys that we think are really good players, like Isaiah Mobley, has barely been able to crack in past a two-way contract and get opportunities. And he continues to develop. He really developed during his time at USC when he first got to USC. He was definitely not ready. It would not have been ready after 1 year. But, after a couple seasons, he added a three-point shot and stuff. I thought he would be able to stay on a roster pretty consistently, and that hasn't been the case. So, it's tough to do that, and we'll see what kind of the decision is. We expect him to leave still, but would not be upset if we got a chance to cover him again next year.
No, not upset, but definitely surprised, right? No way he's coming back.
But our other segment, Stunt Like My Daddy, Bronny Talk, some of his season now. Obviously, Is it a positive? Is it a negative? Is it somewhere in between? What do we make of this season? I'll let you go first, and then I'm gonna give my thoughts.
Sure. Well, everything I read, the anonymous GMs on Bronny, like it, everyone says it's about what I expected, given the heart thing, and that he needs more time. It's just that's the universal opinion outside of the James camp, it sounds like, because people I've talked to recently, I've heard he's leaning NBA, which I just think, I know his circumstances are so different, and it's unlike any other prospect in the past because your dad is one of the all-time greats, just a totally different situation. It's just so clear he needs more time. He needs more development. It's not Sierra Canyon anymore, and he developed really nicely at Sierra Canyon to be the go-to guy as a senior, but it took a while. And now in college, has the injuries. He was sort of up and down this year. Andy Enfield kind of, I don't want to say froze him out of the rotation, but his role got a little smaller as the year went on when some of the guards got healthier. Next year, it's a clean slate. It's wide open. He's going to play a ton, barring an injury. So I think he should come back, be the two guard, and I almost feel like they're rushing him to the NBA. Not that they're afraid of what's going to happen in college, but like I feel like they just don't like all the like memes and the stuff like, oh, you know, he's not that good. Let's just get him in the NBA and he'll be fine there. I think he's got to go through these growing pains and stick with the college game, get the reps. That's just so clear to me. But hey, I'm not LeBron James, and we've been on this the whole way. So he wasn't even a starter last year when everyone was healthy. Go or come back, don't go. Be a starter. Be a big-time role guy on this team. Have a way bigger role than you did a year ago. I think that'll help him monumentally, and it's what he needs to do.
Yeah, I think if he leaves, he'll become part of that statistic you were talking about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, unless his dad, you know, he's like Thanasis Antetokounmpo, you know, unless it's like that, which that
his dad
be good.
Can't play until he's 50.
Yeah.
LeBron's body can't take that much. He is an Adonis, but you can't play till you're 50 in the NBA. So he would not be making that second contract, I don't think. Still, this was a great season for him. Because the man was dead. He was unconscious. Yep. His heart had stopped. To be back and playing and doing anything, it was a great season. So let's not forget that. Everyone wants to talk about, oh, he didn't do this, he didn't do that. I don't care. The man came back after had to have heart surgery. I'd give him all the props for coming back, and you know he could easily sat out this season. No, he and his family wanted to rush him back. You know, they wanted to be back. It wasn't about waiting and you know getting a clean slate or anything like that. After all this, he wanted to come back and knew there was going to be struggles with it, and he came back and did it. So I was excited to see him come back, and I think we'll just continue to see him grow the more and more he plays. So looking forward to see him next year in a USC uniform because I think that's the best move for him.
I totally agree, but will that be what happens? I don't know. The most recent thing I heard, a little chatter, he's leaning NBA. I hope that changes.
Well, you can lean and you can rock with it, but you need to come back to USC. Yep. Let's put it that way. With that, we're going to jump into our break, and then when Connor and I return, we'll look forward to the upcoming weekend of action for the women of Troy, and we hope to have a special guest. We'll see if we can make that happen, and we'll talk about the opponents coming up, Texas A&M, Corpus Christi, and the potential matchup between Kansas and Michigan as well.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Welcome back from the break. Make sure to check out our sponsors. Also, please like, subscribe, and review the podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform. We always appreciate that. Also, if you have any questions, comments, requests, you can send them in at podcast@uscfootball.com. Just make sure you put triple double or the basketball pod in the headline to make sure it gets directed at us. Now, it may sound a little bit different right now. We've put away the water fountain. You know, we're putting away. We've left campus. We watched a couple of men's games. We're finishing up the night leading in. Unfortunately, we were not able to lock up a good time to chat with a women's basketball player, Mackenzie Forbes. Maybe we'll be able to get her on next week. We'll see if we can get things lined up if the women of Troy are still playing. So we got to look forward, though. We've talked about what's gone on in the past. We talked about the men and where their season ended. The women's season is just beginning, though, Connor. Big time opportunity starting on Saturday in the Galen Center. Unique time for a game, I would say. You know, there's going to be a game before. Michigan and Kansas will play, I believe, at 11 a.m. is when that game is going to start. And then the women of Troy will play, scheduled to start at 1:30. We'll see, you know, depending on that first game, what goes on there of when they play. But looking forward, what are your initial thoughts, you know, when you saw who they have matched up and the opportunity when you saw it's a 1:30 game on a Saturday, kind of a unique time, you know, kind of looking at it. What did you think initially seeing the teams that are coming into the Galen Center?
Well, with the time, I know USC, especially the women's team, it's been such a kid-friendly program. I feel like you watch the USC women's basketball team and Juju's a big part of it. So many young kids, not even just young girls, look up to her. But the Galen Center would get really filled, and a lot of it would be young families and guys who would take their daughters, and it was really cool to see. So I expect Saturday, 1:30. It's early, but that's a great time to bring the kids to a game. So I expect USC to have a really good home court advantage against Texas A&M Corpus Christi. I don't think, like we talk a lot about on the men's side, like an early football game, that might not be the same. You'd maybe prefer a night game for it to be a little louder. I don't see that way at all with the women. I think they'll have a great home court advantage, like I said. And Texas A&M Corpus Christi, can't say I watched a ton of them this year, but brushing up on them before this podcast, they play defense shotgun, so USC is going to have to hit shots.
Yeah, the Islanders, love the nickname there, Texas A&M Corpus Christi. There's not really an island in Texas, but you know, down there in the Gulf, there's a couple little things. So we'll give it to them, whatever. You know, they shocked Lamar to win the Southland Conference to get into the tournament. They had lost to Lamar during the regular season, but they were able to get them in the conference tournament, 23-8 coming in. So a team that has won some games. Now, obviously, the Southland Conference is not the Pac-12. But as you mentioned, they play defense. Seventh in the nation in field goal percentage defense, fourth in the nation in three-point percentage defense. They got their 10th in the nation in steals. So they will get at you on the defensive end. Problem is they can't score the basket at all. You know, they struggled to score. Their leading scorer is averaging just a little over 10, 11 points. They have three players in double figures. But, you know, that's where USC has an advantage. Their offense is much better than Corpus Christi's offense is. So, but can USC's offense score against their defense? That would be the big matchup for USC. And I think it's going to be a challenge just because we talked about it in the first half. This is the first time for all of them. This is a new experience. So the hype, the jitters, playing at home, all your friends are coming, friends and family, everyone's coming out, wanting to see you play in the NCAA tournament. I think it's a lot easier when you're on the road. Like last year, you go to Virginia Tech. You know, I think it's easier to just kind of lock in, like, hey, you're on the road, you're by yourself. There's, you know, there are a handful of friends and family that have traveled across the country to Blacksburg. Blacksburg's not an easy place to get to, by the way. Whereas now you're at home, everyone's want to come out. As you mentioned, it's Saturday. It's in the middle of the day. Everyone should be able to get out to it, you know, as far as scheduling. kid-friendly time. So I think there's a little bit more pressure there as well.
Definitely that there is some pressure. I hope this doesn't come back to bite me. I just don't know if Texas A&M Corpus Christi is the team to capitalize on some of that pressure. One other thing with them I did want to say, so you mentioned the three scores and double figures. Their third leading scorer, Paige Allen, she was actually the player who went off against Lamar in that conference championship game, 22 points, 12 rebounds, 7 of 14 from the field. I thought that was interesting. It wasn't the leading scorer. It wasn't the second leading scorer. It was their third leading scorer. And Allen on the year shoots around 40%. So it seems like she just got really hot in that game, and she'll be someone to watch. The last game they played was a week ago. So like USC, it's been a lot of rest for Corpus Christi. But their third leading scorer had the big game in the conference championship game. I know Lindsey Gottlieb will have scouted that game and their whole team really well. But I'm looking at Paige Allen in this game. If Corpus Christi does give USC a hard time, she showed she can do it in a championship game. I'm sure she could do it in the NCAA tournament too.
Now, one area where USC should have an advantage is their size. Now, USC is not a big team, but they have a little bit more size than Texas A&M Corpus Christi. Their leading scorer, Alicia Westbrook, is listed as a forward slash center. She's only 6'1". So with Rhea Marshall, with Kristen Davis down low, with, you know, Khalil Sakamwafu, USC should have an advantage in the size. Now, do they use that to attack? One other thing about the Islanders, we looked at, you know, their stats. They shoot a lot of free throws. You know, they're, I think, top 20 in the nation in shooting free throws. However, they don't shoot them very well. They're 242nd in the nation in field goal and free throw percentage, shooting 69%, but they shoot 21 attempts per game. So they're going to try to attack the basket. You know, it seems like it's a drive type offense, try to get into the lane, create some fouls type of thing. So, you know, can USC stay out of foul trouble, make sure that's not an issue as well? Ultimately, it comes down to this. There's only been one 16 seed ever win on the women's side, and that was a team beating Stanford when Stanford lost two players the week leading up to it in the Pac-12 tournament to season-ending injuries. So, you know, two of their top players. So that's the only time a 16 has ever beat a one. USC should take care of business here. They are favored by, I believe it was 31.5 points the last time I saw it. So They should take care of business in this one. Even though the Islanders can play some defense, we're hyping them up a little bit. USC should wipe them off the floor. That's what should happen. We'll see if it does. And then that'll be something interesting. If they don't, what is the cause of it? Does it look like it's nerves? Does it look like, you know, they turn the ball over? They're just not playing crisp because they haven't played in a week. You know, those type of things. Those will be things we'll be looking at, because then if they do win, as we expect, they will play again on Monday. Now, the game on Monday, the times have not been determined. The NCAA has not released those times yet. They won't announce those until they see the matchups, and then they can decide, ooh, we like this game in primetime or whatever it may be. USC would then play the winner of the Kansas versus Michigan matchup, which will take place before USC plays on Saturday. So they will have an opportunity to scout, you know, beforehand. Kansas comes into the game 19-12 in the season, 11-7 in the Big 12. Michigan comes in at 20-13, 9-9 in the Big 10. Looking at these rosters, looking at these stat sheets, what kind of stands out to you about the two teams?
Overall, with the net ranking, I think that's sort of where I started when I was doing some research. And Arizona, the team who got in by the skin of their teeth because they play in the Pac-12 and it's so good, their net's 38. And then you look at Arizona's 35. Kansas' net, 38. Michigan's net, 48. You can't really compare the styles of teams based on net ranking, but I just thought it was interesting that I just think the Pac-12 was so good this year. USC did so well in the Pac-12. And the Big 12 has some nice teams. The Big 10, of course, has Iowa and Caitlin Clark and Ohio State, some other talented teams. But the Pac-12 was so good this year that a bubble team in Arizona has a better net ranking than Kansas and Michigan. And it's a long way of me saying another winnable game for USC, regardless of the opponent. You look at some of the statistics for these teams, and I think Michigan shoots the three all right, and Kansas is a decent field goal percentage shooting team, but nothing jumps out like this is something, oh, that team does exceptionally well and USC might be in trouble. I think they're two solid teams, but for my money, you got USC, number one seed, an elite team. Kansas or Michigan, they're solid, but I don't know if solid can beat USC. So If Kansas and Michigan people are listening to this, you might have some bulletin board material. Those are my initial thoughts.
Kansas does have one category where they're leading USC by a wide margin. They got some sweet 1980s-esque Major League Baseball baby blue uniforms. Those look great. I hope we see those this weekend from the Jayhawks. Now, one thing about Kansas is they have a pair of six-year seniors, Holly Kurtzgeiter and Zakiya Franklin. Zakiya Franklin's played more than 1,000 more minutes in her career than anyone else in school history. Like, she has played for forever for this team. So this is not a team that I think is going to be intimidated when they come in. With those two leading the way at the guard spots, and then down low, they have 6'6" Tyana Jackson, who's a fourth-year senior, I believe, for them, who's, you know, all-time school leader in block shots, third in school history in rebounds. Kurtzgeiter has a school record for 3 points made in a career. So these are players that are have defined this program. So obviously they want to take something big to end their careers on, and a win over USC, knocking off a one seed, would definitely be that. So that experience is something that, you know, does give me a little bit of pause, because USC, as we talked about, has none. This group is a very veteran team that has played together for a long time. So if they are able to get by Michigan, you know, they have an opportunity to, maybe they can do something with their, you know, the experience they have. On the other side, Michigan, now the roster is significantly different than it was 2 years ago. But 2 years ago, they went to the Elite Eight. So they have some tournament experience as well. They're led by junior guard Layla Felia, who has averaging 16 and a half points, almost 17 points, 3.5 rebounds, 2 assists. But the only other player they have in double figures is Lauren Hansen. She's 11.9. So they don't have a lot of, you know, bolt scorers there. If USC can slow down Layla, then I think they got a great chance against Michigan as well. Like you said, the Big Ten has two really good teams and some solid teams. And Michigan was a bubble team for the Big Ten. They're able to get in as a 9 seed. They'll play Kansas. We'll see who comes out of that one. And then we'll likely play against USC on Monday at a time to be determined.
When I fill out my bracket, I picked Kansas. Who do you have?
I believe I picked Michigan, knowing they went to the Elite Eight a couple years ago. So I was leaning on that experience. I didn't know too much about Kansas. If I had seen these jerseys beforehand, I definitely would have picked them. I'm telling you guys, these things are sweet. But I think that's who I picked. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I had USC sliding into the Sweet 16 pretty comfortably. But we'll see how it goes this weekend at the Gaylord Center.
Yeah, the home games make all the difference. I just think it's such a big advantage for USC having the two games in the Gaylord Center Saturday, Monday. What time do you want the game to be Monday?
Ideally, I would probably want something in like a 4 or 5 p.m., you know, to get that potentially be a primetime game on the East Coast. That'd be great for USC to get that exposure. And my flight is at 12:40 a.m., so, you know, I could just wrap up stuff at the Gaylord Center and then head straight to the airport.
That would be great. I'm nervous they're going to put them at the late-night primetime window, the 7 o'clock Pacific, the late window for the East Coast. I hope not. We'll have to see, I guess, though.
Yeah, it just depends on, like I said, the matchups, and hey, Juju is a big draw, so that is quite possibly something they will do there. And it also depends on where all the regionals are going on at the time. I don't know. I can't think of all the ones that are on the same day as USC as far as the West Coast ones, but there are plenty of West Coast teams hosting because of all of the Pac-12 teams that are hosting and Gonzaga getting a host as well. But yeah, it is unique to women's college basketball compared to men's that you have regional. You know, there are true regionals to begin the first couple rounds. This is similar to college baseball, where you have regionals. Now, baseball, you go to super regional. So then whoever is the makes it out of Baylor and Virginia Tech would then come to USC and make it that much more difficult for them to play in the Gaylord Center. But that's not the case. They'll be going to Portland to play the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games if USC is to make it that far. Whoever wins those games will then go to Cleveland for the Final Four. So a little bit different than the men's game in that regard. So it takes away the upsets a little bit more. So USC should be able to because you don't have the crowd rallying around. When you see, you know, a Kentucky get in trouble like we did today, suddenly, well, I'm just here to see whoever the game is afterwards, but I want to see Oakland win, right? I want to see this big upset. I want to be have been there. I was fortunate enough when USC lost to Michigan State in men's basketball last year. One of the games a couple later was Fairleigh Dickinson versus Purdue. So I was finishing up my work, and I just start hearing the roars. And I'm like, what's going on? And I guess Fairleigh Dickinson's keeping it close. This is the first half. And then you could hear the stadium get louder and louder as that game progressed, as fans just started adopting Fairleigh Dickinson. If they were not Purdue fans, they were there for any other team. They're like, well, I want to see some history. I want to see the 16. You don't get that when you're playing a host regional. So you don't see as many upsets of, you know, the one seeds early, the one, two, three, four seeds in the first weekend of the tournament like you do in the men's side, which is a little bit different, which I think if you earn it, I'm perfectly fine with it. And the fact that you get better crowds, you know, if the women's game was getting consistent crowds that they do at the men's games and for some of the regional action, it makes it just easier when you're regionalizing the teams and bringing them in. So USC will get an opportunity against some teams from kind of all over the country, actually, for this one. But, you know, they get a great opportunity to host first time ever in the Galen Center and should be popping for sure.
What a difference a year makes. I remember watching the game USC had in Blacksburg last year, first round, roster totally different. And now 365 days later, hosting number one seed, Pac-12 tournament champions, hats off to Lindsey Gottlieb and her whole program. I mean, crazy, crazy year it's been for USC. In my wildest dreams when we started doing this podcast, I did not think that they would be this good. So really, really cool.
They don't have to worry about the Jackrabbits this year, South Dakota State, who got them last year in overtime, actually. So, yep, you know,
I remember.
You know, Rhea Marshall and Kayla Williams and a couple of the players that, you know, are in the rotation that were on that team, maybe they can use that experience from last year and, you know, help pass it along to their teammates of, hey, we don't want to be in that type of situation. We want to be able to stomp somebody out, take care of business, and be able to celebrate and have fun throughout the game while the walk-ons get in or whatever it is at the end of the game type of thing. So we'll see how they play on Saturday and then how that carries over into Monday if they are to win on Saturday. But, Connor, I don't know. You got anything else for this episode?
Well, two teams on two totally different paths, talking about the men and the women. I hope next year at this time. I actually ran into Jordan Moore today, who does the play-by-play for the men, and he said, hey, we shouldn't be here in L.A. today. We should be somewhere for the NCAA tournament. And I was like, you're absolutely right, my friend. Hopefully next year.
Yeah, well, hopefully, you know, they put a regional in LA and then USC can be there while the women are playing as well. Then we can cover both of them back and forth. You know, the men can be on a Friday, women can be on a Saturday. We'll get four games in 4 days. It'll be great. That's going to wrap it up for this episode of the USC Triple Double Podcast. We can hope and wish and dream, and we'll see. Hopefully, the men get back on track. We'll see what kind of things they do in the transfer portal. But all eyes right now are on the women of Troy to see what they can do this weekend, see if they can make it to a Sweet 16, and then go from there. That's going to wrap it up for us. This has been the Triple Double Podcast, part of the Peristyle Podcast family. Please help us out. Make sure you like, subscribing, sharing, all those things. Leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast listening platform. We always welcome your feedback, comments, questions at podcast@uscfootball.com. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratley, saying thank you to my co-host, Connor Morissette, for sticking it out. We had to break it up. We had some, you know, we had some gnat sound earlier while we're on campus. Now we're finishing up and getting ready for the weekend. Should be a fun one at Galen Center. We'll be there as well as our Ahmad, who's been, you know, covering the team all season. So we will have you guys covered with some photos, stories, video, a little bit of everything out there. So look forward to that. Hope you guys can check out uscfootball.com for more this weekend as we go through it. And hopefully you will join us for the next episode of the USC Triple Double Podcast.